Coming up on today's Tomahawk Show, we're going to talk about the withdrawal or not withdrawal that I went through watching my first weekend of NFL football from my couch, not associated with a team in over 12 seasons. We're going to cover all the biggest storylines from a wild week one in the NFL, including the crazy game in Green Bay where Aaron Rodgers did his best Jesus Christ impression and resurrected himself from the dead, came back, led his team to a victory against the Bears, against all odds. And of course, the freaking tie that happened in Cleveland with the Browns and the Steelers and all the young QBs that are trying to take the league by storm. Hawk and I are going to pick our week one standouts as well as the trio of standout players from week one. All that and much, much more coming up on the Tomahawk Show.
Welcome to the Tomahawk Show, presented by Uninterrupted. I am Andrew Hawkins, joined as always by my co-host, 30-year NFL veteran, 27-time Pro Bowler, 4-time Super Bowl winner, Joe Thomas, as well as my guy, NFD, like always. Listen, before we jump into it, make sure you follow us on all social media, at Tomahawk Show. Hashtag us, Tomahawk, whenever you have anything you want to talk about. We'll make sure we try to get it onto the show. Also, DraftKings. We got a listener league. Get in it. We had a little technical difficulties, which we'll talk about. But regardless, if you haven't signed up, head to DraftKings.com, enter code HIKE, H-I-K-E, and you'll get a discount courtesy of Tomahawk Show. Joe, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing great, man. I had a huge weekend. I had my fourth child born Friday night about 11 p.m. and a few hectic days after that. Obviously, anybody that's had a new baby understands that you don't really sleep a lot, and it's a little bit crazy, especially with three other little ones running around. And of course, my first weekend in 11 years not playing in the NFL or being on a team for a Sunday. So it was a lot of fun. I got to sit on my couch and enjoy for the very first time my two TV setup. I got the NFL direct ticket or whatever the hell they call it. And I can watch any games that I want. So I put on the left TV the Browns game. And then on the right TV, I watched the Patriots versus the Texans. And it was a lot of fun. I sat there on my couch by myself for the most part and watched the games, took some notes, did some live tweeting, did some recaps, threw them up on my Twitter page, and generally had an awesome, awesome fun weekend watching pro football.
You what seem like you? A lost puppy. If I must say so myself, when I was watching you live on social media, it seemed like a guy who had no idea what the hell to do with himself.
Trust me, it was fun. It was great watching other people work.
Live media recaps, tweets, notes. When I seen your notes, I'm like, you took more notes today than you did before we played games in Cleveland.
That's false. I was a big note taker, but we'll go with it.
For the sake of the joke. No, that's cool, man. So was it weird not playing? Would you have rather have done what you did yesterday as opposed to playing at this point in your life? Keep it real.
You know, at this point in my life, I just know where my body is, and I just know I can't do it anymore. I know I can't handle the practice. I can't handle the preparation. And even though the 3 hours of game day would be a lot of fun, I know that the second I walked off that field, I'd be in debilitating pain, and they'd probably be putting me in a wheelchair. So I think I'm very comfortable. And I'm very accepting of the fact that I just can't play the NFL anymore.
Can't handle the practice. You didn't practice the last 3 years of your career.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the problem. I couldn't practice less than no practices. So whatever that number is. But even though I tell you what, when I was watching the Browns game and the beginning of the game started, it was raining. It was nasty conditions, which is what I loved playing. And unlike Hawk, I love the colder and the wetter, the better. You just see those fans and how lubed up everybody is and the excitement and pageantry around, especially week one. That was always a special week, an emotional week for me when I was playing. And I definitely missed being out there and being part of some successes. You know, that was a really good close game in Cleveland. Obviously, it was a little bit back and forth. And then the way it ended in a tie was pretty crazy. But we'll talk about that a little bit later. But either way, I did miss it at the beginning, but I still had it in the back of my mind that, you know, I can't do this. So there was never any second thoughts about, did I make the right decision to retire?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. This is obviously my second year not being there on opening day. And I can honestly say I was more excited this year than I was last year. Last year with opening day, I was kind of like, oh, man, thank God I'm not out there. Probably because your body is still feeling the effects of playing. This year, not that I wish that I was out there, but like you said, when the games were getting going, I forget what video it was, but it showed like a field angle of a player like getting juiced for a game. And I could feel like those emotions go through my body again.
Yeah.
And then when it was like late in the game. So for people who don't know, I have a radio show on ESPN. During game time, 1 to 5, we watch all the games, kind of go through everything almost like a red zone for radio. When the Browns-Steelers game was coming down to the wire, I was so juiced out of my seat, jumping up, that I got in trouble by our producers multiple times. And like I had to have a conversation afterwards about how I had to be professional, had to be unbiased, because I was like literally jumping out of my seat, throwing shit across the studio. I didn't care, but I mean, this is what they sign up for. You could take a lion out the jungle, but you can't take the jungle out the lion. Am I right, Joe?
Yeah, I feel you, man. You know, I played 11 years for the Browns, so clearly there's an understanding why I would be biased towards the Browns and how much I love the team and all the friends I still have there and the friends even on the coaching staff and in the administration. You know, obviously there's a lot of love. But you played in a bunch of different places, including a long and illustrious clear career in New England.
Yes.
But for some reason, when you play in Cleveland – It just becomes a little bit a part of you, and it's a little bit more special than other places. And I'm not exactly sure why that is, because it's not just you. It's so many other guys that I've played with. But there's just something about, I think, the magic of the Browns and the history of that organization and that city and how much they love their team and, you know, how much passion they have for their pro football. I just feel like when guys play there, it's just a little bit different than playing in other places.
I think it depends on the personality too, because I think, well, so I say two things. When guys come to Cleveland and people come there and expect to like turn it around, we're professional football players, we're competitors, we're like, man, we want to contribute to like being a part of something big. So you become really, really invested in it. Even when you leave, you like to think you helped put it on the right track or you helped leave it in a better place than when you left. So you are connected to it. I tweeted a picture of my son watching the game, and it wasn't like my wife sent it to me. She like had to sit him down and have a talk with him because he's biting his nails. He's getting like visibly upset. You know, he's getting like, but he's so invested. Like he is like Cleveland through and through. And I think that connection also helps. Like, yeah, this, for whatever reason, like you said, I played all over the place, including the New England Patriots. But there's something about Cleveland, man, that just feels like home.
Mm-hmm. Does your son feel that way about the Bengals too? Because you spent, what, 3 years in Cincinnati and 3 years with the Browns?
Early on, he did. But, like, after the first couple months I was there, he just became a Cleveland kid, man. Like, that's, like, where he started following football closely, watching every game, not just analyzing. Like, I could give you a whole quarterback and position breakdown of the text he gave me yesterday of how the Browns need to get better. And I'm like, dude, you are way too into this, way too early.
That's awesome. Well, hey, man, let's get right into it. Obviously, it was a huge weekend for pro football being week one. We still got a few games tonight, but let's review the action and jump right into it. Browns-Steelers. Hawk, I know you said you watched it. Were you able to catch the entire game?
Yeah, I watch every game. I seen every game that was played yesterday, I watched from start to finish.
So how does that happen? Do you have like one of those
how is that humanly possible?
Like, yeah, I don't get it. Like I watched two games and obviously my attention was kind of torn between the two. So I didn't see every play of both games because I was mostly focused on the Browns game, especially the way it ended. But how do you watch all the NFL games? Do you go back and watch like coaches cut-ups or are you watching the review, the rewinds? I don't even know what it's called. This is my first weekend out of football in 12 years.
So, yeah. So, basically, I'm in the studio with every game on every TV. So, I'm watching live, like, going from game to game to game. We have Red Zone on one TV, and every other game is playing live. So, I'm seeing every big play. I'm, like, tapping into this game, that game. So, you hear the storylines. You're watching the stories develop. Like, I'm more in tune with the NFL than I've ever been in my life.
So you're not actually watching every play, but you're just catching all the highlights from all the games.
I'm tuned in. And that's like,
no, I believe, I mean, there's like 8 games that are going on at once.
I'm not watching the all 22 and breaking down line and play, Joe. No.
Thank you. All right. I am. I'm taking notes. I took 4 pages of notes on the Browns game.
And this is like copy. Oh, I guess you're a lineman. You get all your notes.
This is single space too. This is not how you did your homework at Toledo. This is like legitimate 4 pages of notes.
I went to Columbia and I played for the Patriots. All right.
You all right, let's talk
top line credits.
Well, Joe, what are some of your notes, Joe?
Well, here, I'll show you. My very first note of the game was, wow, it's raining.
Okay.
Great note.
Yes, Wisconsin education.
So I could reach back into my memory. But no, hey, let's talk about the game. I think there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot to break down. And I think, Hawk, I would love to hear your perspective, because my perspective is kind of like mostly from the line play stuff. And I know some of the skill play stuff, but obviously not as well as you do. But it looked like early on the Browns offense struggled to get things going, you know, including Tyrod Taylor wasn't completing a lot of balls. What did you see from him and from that offense early on in the game?
Well, I was reading Twitter, and like you said, we know we're Tyrod fans. I was reading Twitter. People weren't exactly excited about the quarterback play, but here's what you have to keep in perspective. He played way better than the Hall of Famer on the other side of the field. So maybe the field conditions, and I genuinely believe this, that the field conditions really played into like Tyrod's overall product. And here's why. Tyrod, by nature, is a cautious quarterback. That's what keeps players in games, his teams in games when he's at the helm, is because he's not going to make dumb decisions. He's not going to take unnecessary risk. If there's a chance that it's going to be bad, he's going to pull it back, which is why he doesn't throw very many interceptions. Well, in bad weather, when it's raining and it's pouring, he's going to take even less chances. So I think that's why you've seen some of the numbers were the way that they were, because he was trying to be cautious. He was pulling the thing down. He wasn't taking big chances. One thing that encouraged me is that when you talked about the skill players, guys like Josh Gordon, when we needed a play, he stepped up. Jarvis Landry, I remember late, Tyrod threw a ball behind him. He reached back and an incredible hands catch in the rain. Like, those are the plays that aren't routinely there for us. And that's why I feel like we should be encouraged. Besides the fact, you know, I get it. It's like, you don't know, you're conflicted about it. You didn't win, but you didn't lose. And I felt the same way for a while. But after like decompressing, the tie should be something we're excited about, because yes, we didn't lose. We didn't win. But there were so many encouraging things in that game, and we didn't even got to the defense yet. Just from a receiver standpoint, Higgins and Njoku, plays were made, and Njoku left a couple out there. But even still, like I said, as a collective, you realize, okay, we have the weapons to be something special, that when Tyrod gets in better weather and he gets more comfortable, that we can compete with anybody, especially the way we did with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, I think what you saw from the Browns in the second half is the type of offense that they're going to want to be the rest of the season. I think they're going to want to take those shots on the outside to Josh Gordon, right? Those 50-50 balls, those back shoulder throws, those throws that are either going to go to Josh or nobody. You know, take those shots, keep that defensive secondary stretched. Also, take those shots to David Njoku. He's going to be a big weapon in the middle of the field, throw the ball high. It's going to be him or nobody. And then get a lot of targets to Jarvis Landry, right? He's not the deep threat that Josh Gordon is, but he's got incredible hands. He does a great job opening up the inside of a defense because of the way he can get open, because his catch radius is so impressive. And one thing they need to do earlier is obviously get the run game going. Early yesterday, they didn't really run the ball very well in the first half, but once they got things going with Chubb and Hyde, they started to do a little bit better all the way around on offense. And so I think running the ball is going to be really, really important, especially early on next week. But I think what you saw from Tyrod is he's not going to throw those picks like you mentioned, but where he is really dangerous is running the football.
Yes.
Once he pulls the ball down and he starts running, that's something that a defense is going to have to start accounting for, especially in a close game. You can't let those opposing quarterbacks pick up a 3rd and 6 by running the football, a 3rd and 5, you know, because they're going to have to start playing them a little bit differently. That's why I think, you know, you hear some of these announcers on TV and they're already trying to push like the Baker Mayfield. Oh, they should go to Baker Mayfield. Look at Tyrod Taylor's stats. You know, he didn't have very good completion percentage. Well, yeah, pump the brakes. It was raining. Second of all, he's such a weapon pulling the ball and yep. running it, that he's opening up things for the rest of the offense. But what were your takeaways from the Browns defense?
I mean, it looked legit, dude. That defensive player of the year prediction by NFD looks better and better, because Myles Garrett is a different kind of dude, man. He is a different kind of dude. Besides that, I mean, guys swarmed to the ball. They were around the ball when they needed to be. They created turnovers. Denzel Ward looking like an all-star pick.
He looked awesome.
They were incredible. There are some, you know, without Le'Veon Bell, the Steelers' offense did look a little different. I mean, they were playing a lot of cover two, it looked like. And I know with Le'Veon in there, I don't know if you'd be able to do that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, they look like they were gelling for a first opening day game. They're only going to get better from here, man.
I thought the biggest surprise of the game for me was the Browns' pass coverage. Now, granted, it was raining, but I thought they did an excellent job on Antonio Brown. They did an excellent job, obviously, with the turnovers, the way they swarmed to the football in the secondary. I thought that was a huge improvement over last year, which I didn't think the Browns' pass defense was all that great last year. They had an unbelievably good run defense last year, but my biggest disappointment from the Browns this weekend from a defensive standpoint was early on, they really had a hard time fitting that run game. They let Connors from Pittsburgh get going way too early and way too often, and he had too many easy runs. It wasn't like you were seeing him bust through like tiny little holes. There was a lot of bigger holes, especially early on in that game, for the Steelers to run through. And it looked like they fixed it in the second half, so it may have been like a game plan thing where they had a couple runs dialed up early on that the Browns weren't ready for, and they didn't really know how to fit it in the run game, especially with formation and personnel. But they did get it fixed, but it did hurt them early on, because I think they had well over 100 yards rushing into the fourth quarter.
What are some of the things that concerned you? For me, there was probably too many penalties. And also, there might be too many chefs in the kitchen in the backfield.
For the Browns?
Yeah. I get it's a good problem to have, but I would like to see one of those guys be able to kind of just take it by the horns and get the opportunity to get going and find the rhythm as we bounce in and out. I feel like we got to, you know, and I get it was wet. We got to get Duke more involved in the passing game as well. But beyond that, the penalties to me was kind of a glaring thing.
Yeah, obviously the penalties was an issue. I thought Desmond Harrison, it was his first NFL start, first real major action on any level. I mean, he played at Texas and then a small school, but for a rookie undrafted guy to play in the first game of his NFL career against the Steelers at home, it's a very tough environment, and he did have two false starts early on in the game. And to me, that tells me that he was thinking about a lot of things, and then you just go on one. When you have a lot of things in your mind at the line of scrimmage, you, by instinct, just go on one. And it looked like Terod was doing a good job changing the snap count up, and that caused Desmond to jump a few times. But I thought overall, Desmond had a really good game. He showed the reason why people said he could have been a top five pick if he didn't have the off-field issues. And you see why the coaching staff was comfortable putting him in the game, because he was extremely athletic. He did a great job against Bud Dupree. There was only a couple times when Bud was able to bull rush him a little bit. But other than that, he showed really good athleticism. And it didn't look like he had too many mental mistakes. He had a couple, and he had those early penalties. But I thought he settled in, and I think they have found who they want for the Browns on the left side, with Joel Bitonio at left guard and Desmond Harrison at left tackle.
So do we get to celebrate the win? Should we be happy about the tie enough to celebrate the quote-unquote win?
So,
I know we didn't win. We tied. Should we be happy about it?
So that was the big question, right? You know, do we open those Bud Light fridges? Do they pop open at midnight when the tie happens, right? And I think, honestly, as I was feeling after the game, emotionally drained and upset and disappointed, I do not think you can celebrate a tie like that, especially the way it happened. I think maybe it would be a little differently if it was kind of a back-and-forth game and you drove down the field and you kicked a field goal to tie. Right? I think then you could walk out of that locker room and say, wow, I feel really good about ourselves.
Yeah.
But the way the defense got all those turnovers, marched down the field, were able to give you an opportunity to kick a field goal to win, and then you get it blocked, it just leaves such a bad taste in your mouth that even though it was a tie, and I think at the beginning of the game, if you ask Browns fans, hey, if they tie the Steelers today, would you feel good about it? They would probably have said yes going into it. I think the way it happened at the end, both teams probably felt really salty because they both felt like they let one slip away by shooting themselves in the foot.
You're an O-lineman, the block field goal in 30 seconds. Whose fault was it?
So I posted this on my Twitter right after the game. I haven't seen the coaches' cut-ups yet, and that's usually the only way you can tell exactly what happened, because a lot of times the TV copies don't give you an angle that's right down the line of scrimmage, so you can't tell exactly where the push was or if the defense was earlier. But I said there was three big factors that led to the field goal, right? The first, which is the conditions, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's raining. The ball's going to come out a little bit lower when it's wet like that. So you get a low kick, right? The second one was, it looked like the Steelers got a little bit of an early jump on the ball. It looked like they may have been offsides. I'm not exactly sure. You know, obviously there's a referee that stands right there that looks down the line of scrimmage at the football, and he's going to call it if it was a little bit more than close. But sometimes in those situations, when it's close, they just let him play because it's such a bang-bang thing that you can't really tell unless you slow it down and go back. And so because the Steelers got such a good jump, maybe probably offsides, what happened was then the left side of the Browns' field goal protection was a little bit late out of their stance based on how soon the Steelers' side of the ball got off the line of scrimmage. And so when they're a little bit late, they ended up giving up a little bit too much push. And so the combination of the low kick, the rain, the early jump that the Steelers got, and the push that was given up sort of from that left side, that three things put together, that's what happens. Those three things together, and then you get a block kick.
Well, being a part of the Tomahawk Show, people who are here just automatically become Browns fans because we talk about the Browns almost 24/7. So No Face Nat, we're going to bring you in. What was it like in your first game as a Browns fan? Because I know you were invested.
Yes, I was invested because thanks to you guys, I get to talk to you 24/7 pretty much, and all I hear about is the Browns. So let's get it straight first. I'm a dedicated 49ers fan. I'm from the Bay Area. I've always been a Niners fan.
Well, let me tell you this. Before, let me stop you there and just let you know that our record is better than yours right now. Continue.
Unfortunately, yes. I had to watch that game yesterday, which sucked. I mean, we couldn't keep the ball in our hands. But back to the Browns. It was definitely fun. I only caught the second half of the game, but it was interesting to watch. They definitely played scrappy. It was great seeing Josh Gordon back on the field. Yes. I mean, we've done, at Uninterrupted, we've done some work with him, you know, following his journey. So it was definitely cool to see him back and killing it. I mean, that catch was amazing.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was insane. Also, I think Jarvis Landry is a great addition to the team. And Joe, your boy, Myles Garrett, was killing it.
Nat, were you ready for the emotional roller coaster that is being a Cleveland Browns fan?
No, I mean, I wasn't. Well, technically, if I kind of got it, if you've been a Browns fan for a long time, you've had to deal with, you know, suffering of some sort.
Uh-huh.
And I can feel that because I've been also a Warriors fan my whole life. So
they've suffered a lot lately.
Yeah, you guys.
Not lately.
I feel for you, Matt. You know exactly what it's like to be a Cleveland Brown fan.
I'm telling you from back in the day. Okay, you guys can. Okay, that's fine. That's fine.
No, keep going.
Continue. Hey, we apologize.
So, no, it's fine. I mean, technically, like you said, it wasn't a win, but it wasn't a loss. So there's progress there. It's going to be a different year. You could already feel, like, although I haven't watched a lot of games in the past, you could already feel the energy is different on the field. So,
one more question. As an outside fan, not completely invested in Browns fandom, we tied the Pittsburgh Steelers. Are you like, you shouldn't celebrate that? Are you thinking like, good job, Brown. You should be proud.
I'm thinking you should be a little bit proud, not to the extent where you should celebrate it. Okay. Like I saw videos online of people like cheering in bars and whatnot. I think that's a little over the top. I think it's a little over the top because it's not a win.
We broke a streak, Nat.
That's true.
We broke a streak.
I will be full on celebrating with you guys when you win.
All right. come over. We'll have a tomahawk show at my house. Yes. We can all celebrate with the victory. The Bud Light victory fridge will be opened, and we'll all pour Bud Lights on our heads when the Browns win. It'll be amazing. Be
wait,
all right, let's team get tomahawk
some
party.
Let's get into some more NFL games here, man.
All right, let's go Packers Bears. You guys watch that game? What an unbelievable game, by the way.
Holy shit, man! You talk about an emotional roller coaster.
So from my defensive player of the year prediction, Miles, to my offensive MVP prediction, Aaron Rodgers, that looked pretty good too.
I feel like he's really hurt too. I don't think he's like going to be here for the next couple of games. He came back, for anyone who lives under a rock and haven't seen any sports shows today, Aaron Rodgers gets hurt late in the second quarter. It looks bad, like he's torn ACL, and it's like, oh man, thank God you signed that huge contract because you're going to spend another year on the IR. He had like such a look of devastation that I know. I was telling everyone around me, like I was a little expert, like, oh, I know that look. He's not coming back, man. This is all bad. DeShone Kizer era starts in Green Bay. The dude comes back and just brings him back from 20-0. Like the other team wasn't even out there.
Well, even the announcers were saying they shouldn't even risk putting him back in the game. And then he comes back and he wins the game.
Oh, my goodness, man. Like I don't even have any words for it. Like, that's what it looks like. I wish I was as good at something as Aaron Rodgers is at football.
He's truly amazing. But here's my question that I'm going to pose to you guys. Here's my question I'm going to pose to you guys, right? We all know the talent that Aaron Rodgers is, right? We all know how great he is on the field, scoring touchdowns, bringing his team back. They're never out of it, right? But, all right, think our generation. Out of all the greatest quarterbacks of our generation, let's say if you took the top five greatest quarterbacks of our generation, I'm going to say that Aaron Rodgers is the only one that hasn't learned how to protect himself. I mean, think about the greatest quarterbacks. All right, Manning, Breeze, maybe even Roethlisberger,
Brady,
Aaron Rodgers, Brady. All right, there's five guys right there. You could throw in maybe Russell Wilson. You could throw in Phillip Rivers, whoever else you want. All those guys have learned to protect themselves and stay healthy.
Yeah.
Except for Aaron Rodgers. He is always getting hurt.
How many times has he landed on IR?
Do we have those numbers? I don't know. Whether I don't know about the IR numbers, but if you've been a Packer fan, I grew up in Wisconsin, so my whole family, all my friends are Packers fans. Mm-hmm. Aaron Rodgers has had a history of concussions. He's had a history of other injuries. Last year, he had the broken collarbone. So even though I don't think he's ended up on IR a ton of times, he's always seems to be getting hurt. And here's my question to everybody, right? Is his legacy going to be tainted? Because, okay, Tom Brady, he's in a discussion of being the greatest football player of all time. Aaron Rodgers has that talent, and he could be in that discussion. But is his inability to stay healthy consistently going to be hurt by the fact that he seems to get hurt all the time?
I don't know, man. He's just so much better than everybody else. I get what you're saying, and it makes a lot of sense because over time, if you're not available, what is it saying that
durability is more important than ability, and availability is more important than ability.
So I think overall, I mean, it's not going to hurt his legacy. It may hamper like the height he'd be able to reach, like if he'd be able to maximize his potential. But I mean, I think that's what makes him great. And even the way he got hurt, I mean, how do you protect yourself? You know who should be protecting him? The GM should make sure his O-line is good enough. Khalil Mack came in the first play. Like, he didn't play the first two plays. And it's funny because the announcers were like, hey, Khalil Mack's going to be on a pitch count. They're going to
bring him in slow. The first he had the greatest half in defensive history.
The first play, somebody like Green Bay running back rushed for 12 yards. And they were like, okay, Khalil Mack, you're in the rest of the game. You good? Okay. But first play, he like bull rushes the tackle all the way into the quarterback. And it's like, okay, well, I get it's Khalil Mack, but at the same time, the best way to protect Aaron Rodgers is by getting him a good O-line.
Joe, why do you think he's been injured so much? So I just looked. Out of the last 10 years, so once he became a starter, 8 of those 10 years, he has started at least 15 games.
Who, Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah. It's only two seasons where he hasn't started at least 15 games.
So in last 10 years. Year, he had the collarbone.
Last year was one. He started 7.
A few years before that, he had all sorts of concussions. Are you sure that number is right? I feel like he was hurt more often than what you're saying.
Nope, you're wrong. 2013, he started 9 games. But from 2008 on, he has started at least 15 games every year except 2.
So if he had something this year where it was like, yo, you land on IR, then that becomes
three. Well, yeah, back-to-back years, yeah.
But even 2 years where you missed. Oh, okay. But I don't know exactly what the numbers are.
Not everyone
are.
Can play totally, every snap like you, Joe.
You totally destroy my point. But as a quarterback, so all right, as a premium quarterback, right, the best in the game, you should be able to be starting 16 games. Like, look at the Manning, the Breeze, the Brady. Those guys, they never, ever, ever got hurt. They were always there for their team.
Brady ended a year on IR.
1 year out of what, 20?
Drew Brees ended a year on IR.
Yeah, in San Diego, not since he's been in New Orleans.
Who else?
And Manning? Manning had 1 year when he had the neck thing.
Manning was like, had no head for like 2 years. And then the 15 right. games could also play into the when you clinch a playoff and they start somebody else week 16. How did, when Deshaun Kaiser went in, were you like, okay, he's about to do this? Or were you like, eh?
I was in his corner, Deshaun, a friend of mine. I'm a Deshaun Kaiser fan. I was like, come on, man, let's do this. And he didn't exactly play great. He was in there. He moved the ball down the field, and then he started getting under a little bit of pressure, and he ran right into Khalil Mack. He didn't do a very good job feeling the pressure, and he coughed it up right away to Khalil Mack. But, I mean, he's still young. He's like 22 years old.
Yeah.
I'm sure he wasn't preparing to play much in that game. And to get thrown in there is a really difficult situation because the Bears, they have a really good defense. Let's be honest.
Is Aaron Rodgers the best quarterback in the league?
I still think Tom Brady is the best quarterback in the league. And I'm gonna go back to my point. It's because he's available. He's not injured as much as Aaron Rodgers.
All right, let's move on. We got the Saints and Bucks. Just the way we doubted up. Ryan Fitzmagic. This
is my call of the year.
Did you call this game?
Yeah, I said Tampa was going to be the worst team in the NFL, and the Saints were going to win the Super Bowl. But then I prefaced it.
Exactly right.
Perfect. I would it be post-fist it if I said it after that? I post-fist it with it's actually opposite day, and I think the Saints are going to be the worst, and the Bucks will be the best.
So Ryan Fitzmagic comes in, and he just throws for almost like 500 yards, 4 TDs, rushes for 1, and he looks like the Fitzmagic that stole money out in Buffalo. Like, he's on the hunt again for somebody to overpay him. But they looked like damn good, man. I was like, well, the Saints defense, they had, to put it lightly, some holes. We'll say it like that. But the Bucks looked really, really good, specifically Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Were you calling him Fitzmagic a second ago?
Yeah, it's his nickname, Fitzmagic.
Wow, I totally missed the boat on that one.
Yeah, man, what are you doing? His new nickname, I said this on SportsCenter on Snap, his new nickname should be Ryan Fitz, play good once every 3 years and trick a team into overpaying for your services. I think it's going to stick.
So now that he had this great performance in week 1 for Tampa, how many more years in the NFL does this buy him? Because everybody knows, like, as a quarterback, all it takes is one good game, and then you get like 3 more years in the NFL out of it, no matter what happens the rest of the season.
He'll if he wants to play 6 more years, he will. But the real question is he wasting his time? Could he be making more money by not playing? Because he's a Harvard grad. He's probably at this point getting in the way of like raising $1 million funds for companies that are shell companies. So he really could be really bringing the bank in if he just uses Harvard education. As a fellow Ivy Leaguer.
I feel like he's going to – yeah, right, as Ivy Leaguer. Get out of here. your online associates – fake honorary degree that you got from Columbia. I still don't believe you. That
Columbia, the country?
Yeah. Columbia College of Toledo. I think that's what it was. But yeah, obviously that was a bad call by me. I think Ryan Fitz magic was pretty unbelievable. So is this Fitzpatrick's team now?
That I raised that question. That's a legit question. Because if he does this, let's say – how long is – I think Jameis is suspended.
He's out 3 games, right?
3 games. So if he does this for 3 games, there will be a genuine conversation of whether or not Ryan Fitzpatrick should be the quarterback.
Well, if he does this for 3 games, it's his team the whole year for sure. I mean, that was pretty
amazing. For sure? Jameis Winston was the top pick.
I know, but that was an impressive outing. I mean, they beat the Saints in New Orleans, the team that still is going to win the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. and he threw for a ridiculous amount of yards.
Here's an underrated take. Matt Ryan is the fifth best quarterback in the NFC South.
Fifth best? There's only 14. Yeah,
exactly. Jameis and Ryan Fitzpatrick are now ahead of him.
That's impressive. Matt Ryan, he did not look good on opening day, that's for sure. Oh,
goodness.
But, well, hey, let's jump to some other NFL news and notes. I think one thing that we should do is who was your best player of the game this weekend? Mm-hmm. Who gets that Tomahawk crown for, hey, you were the best player in the NFL this week?
I'm going with Tyreek Hill. It's not because he's short. It's a little bit because he's short, but also he's a baller. The dude is probably the most electric player in the NFL. I've said this for 2 years. You can go back on my Twitter and fact check this. I think he is going to be one of the biggest names. If he's not already, like, I think he's going to get to the point where we think of him as Antonio Brown, as, you know, Todd Gurley, these like huge playmaking names, because he can do it all, dude. Just to watch the things he was doing, he just looks like he's at a different speed in the NFL. That's like, that's incredible to do.
My Tomahawk crown goes to, and this is going to be an underrated one here, I'm sure you guys have not even watched one of this guy's plays yet, Trent Brown, left tackle for the New England Patriots.
Hawk watched every play of every game. All right,
I know Hawk,
every single play.
No, I'm going to tell you, Trent Brown, he blew me away. And I made the mistake on Twitter, and I said he was a rookie. He's actually not a rookie. He's in his fourth year.
We used to be teammates. That's my guy, Trent B.
Yeah, Trent Beasy. He shut down Jadeveon Clowney. He played exceptional. He looked great. He played with great technique, great length. He was really stout. He gave Tom Brady tons of space and time in the pocket. And I thought that might be a tough matchup for him, because Jadeveon Clowney is really good. He's one of the premier pass rushers in the NFL. The Patriots drafted a guy in the first round this year to replace Nate Solder. That guy tore his Achilles early on in training camp, and Trent Brown has to come in there and step in, and he did a fantastic job. I don't think he gives up that spot all year. He did amazing. He really exceeded my expectations with his technique and the way he played, and that's the reason I'm giving him my Tomahawk crown for the day.
My Tomahawk player of the week, Myles Garrett. I'm going to be a homer there. But
yep, there you go.
It was 21-7. The Browns are down 14 points in the fourth quarter, and the Steelers have the ball. And he almost single-handedly brought the Browns, back into the game. Two forced fumbles, a huge sack on Roethlisberger, setting up lots of points for the Browns, and brought that game into overtime.
But no, I agree with that. Myles Garrett, he was a beast, man. We said this earlier in the show. He's just like, you said the defensive player of the year. Not that I like didn't believe it, but just the more you watch him, you realize like, man, this dude is a man amongst boys.
And he was again, the number one
NFL level. That's like rare to be that way. Hey, what about Deshaun Watson? Andrew Luck came back, both from injury yesterday. What were your thoughts on those guys?
So, like I mentioned, the Texans-Patriots game was that second game I had on while I was watching the Browns. So, I got an opportunity to watch most of it. I thought Deshaun Watson early on looked a little bit rusty. He had a fumble on one of their RPOs. He overthrew a couple passes. He was missing a few targets. And he was forcing the ball to DeAndre Hopkins a few times. And when you play the Patriots defense is a game plan specific defensive scheme. So they're going to do something different every week based on what you do on offense to try to take away your strengths. So in the case of playing against the Texans, they were going to double cover DeAndre Hopkins all game and not let the ball go to him, because they knew he was the one guy that could beat him on defense. And so Deshaun Watson was not – he forced the ball a little bit too much early on into DeAndre Hopkins. And I thought from a offensive standpoint, they called way too many dropback passes early on in the game. I thought that the Houston Texans and Deshaun Watson are more of a outside zone play action type offense, which would be what would fit Deshaun Watson better. You know, I think Deshaun would be perfect in the scheme that Russell Wilson runs, in the Kyle Shanahan type scheme, where you're going to get that outside zone running game going and start throwing your play action passes off of it, where you got one and two man routes. I don't think the Houston Texans offensive line is good enough at pass protecting to be able to sit back there and let Deshaun Watson read the defense. Also, Deshaun Watson is not a guy with enough experience to be able to pick apart a defense just drop back passing all game. he's not experienced enough to go quickly through the progressions and through the reads, getting the ball out on time and on the money. And also, he's a guy that's really athletic. He's got a long drop, so he gets really deep in the pocket, and that makes it extra difficult for an offensive line to block for. And they also do not have a very talented offensive line to start with. So I thought that early on in the game, the play calling was not best suited for Deshaun Watson. But in the second half, he settled down. He stopped forcing the ball to DeAndre Hopkins. They started getting the edge running game, the outside zone running game going. And then that opened up some of those play action passes. And they started having some effective plays against the Patriots. And I thought that was really good. And I think that that's what we're going to see more of later on in the season from the Texans, because they're going to realize that Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, very similar. Don't make those guys just stand back there and throw the ball like they're Tom Brady, because they're not. They have different skill sets.
I can tell that was the game you watched, because you just gave us a four-minute take on Deshaun Watson's offensive line. Greatly appreciated, nonetheless. I think the dropback stuff was more of like them trying to protect his knee, which I get, and you're right, he's not that kind of player. I would be encouraged if I was Texans fans, because late in the game, he showed that he was like a real quarterback in this league, because he like started coming back on Tom Brady, and most guys just tuck their tail. We had some new quarterbacks in new places yesterday as well. One of which we did not predict that would look well, but Kirk Cousins actually played really, really good. Alex Smith looked good for the Washington Redskins, and Case Keenum got the W in Denver. Which one of those guys stood out to you?
Well, I didn't think Kirk Cousins was going to have a great season. You know, when, on my annual Tomahawk quarterback ratings, he's kind of in the middle of the pack, but yep. He got a huge contract, obviously, because quarterback's such an important position. So when they get to free agency, they're going to be making huge dollars. But I would say I'm going to eat my words and say Kirk Cousins, he played really well for the Vikings. He didn't have the numbers that some of these other quarterbacks did this weekend, but he played really well. He gave their team a chance to win. He was very efficient. Yep. And I think with the defense that the Vikings have, he doesn't have to throw for 500 yards, right? You just don't make the big mistake, throw for 250, have a high completion percentage, a couple touchdowns, and you're going to win more games than you lose.
I was surprised their running game looked so well for reasons we won't discuss right now, but I did not expect their running game to be that efficient yesterday, and Dalvin Cook looked really well coming back from a knee injury. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the Vikings defense, man, they're so legit. And even 49ers fans, speaking specifically to you, No Face Nat, don't be sad. The Vikings defense is really, really good. So, of course, they're going to make your team look bad. Next week, if you suck, then you should be concerned. Also, my favorite part about the games yesterday, besides Joe, who was literally live tweeting anything that happened about football yesterday, also who was doing that was Dez Bryant. And it was probably the best thing on the internet yesterday, because – he's talking about places that should sign him. He's laughing at the Cowboys as their receivers look like they went to Columbia College at the University of wherever. And, you know, he was literally just responding to – and it was like, yo, it's just weird seeing a player who should be playing in the NFL, could be playing in the NFL, live tweeting all the games and all the action on a Sunday. He should be getting paid for that.
Here's a question. We'll throw this out there to the Tomahawk squad. Does Dez Bryant look like too much of sour grapes by just constantly going after the Cowboys on Twitter? I mean, should he just be an adult and get mature and just accept the fact that he got cut and move on and just thank the Cowboys for what they did for him and say, hey, you know what? I appreciate it. I think you made a mistake in cutting me. I'm going to make you regret it, but I don't need to sit there and just – childishly attack them every single Sunday when they don't make the right play on offense or their receivers don't make a catch.
Was that a loaded question?
I'm just asking. I'm just throwing it out there.
Be an adult, be mature, and stop being childish. I wonder where you stand on this, Jeff.
Well, I'm just asking. Has he crossed the line?
I don't think he's crossed the line. I get what you're saying, and there is like some professionalism that should be taking place in there, but it would be worse if he was wrong. He's not wrong. Those receivers aren't better than Dez Bryant. They would be a better football team with Dez Bryant. He shouldn't have got cut. Regardless of what you think about his off the field, and we're not in the locker room, so we really don't know. But still, you should put your team in the best position to win. So if you're willing to sacrifice that guy, like not being a part of your team and making your team worse, Like, that shouldn't be it. You should be trying to win football games or put a plan in place to replace him. And they don't have that. They are seriously deficient at wide receiver. Like, it is bad. It is glaring. And I don't think he wants to go back there. I don't think that's the case. He feels like he shouldn't have been cut. And I feel like he's probably right. They need him.
Let's ask Nat here. From a female's perspective, does Dez Bryant make himself look bad by saying anything when the Cowboys receivers are playing poorly? Or would he look better if he just said nothing? Because everyone obviously knows that's the elephant in the room. Like, okay, they cut Dez, and now the receivers suck. If he just takes the high road, he looks better. Or should he just be crushing them on Twitter like he was?
Personally, I think he should not be tweeting everything all the time. Like, I think he should just, like you said, be mature and kind of let it go. Just accept the fact that what happened happened, and instead of being petty online. But then again, it's entertainment. He's doing it so people can, you know, follow him and see what's going to happen next, and they want to know what he's going to say. It's all entertainment. It's all to create a stir online, and that's exactly what he did. So I think he got what he wanted out of it, but I do think that he should, you know, kind of be a little bit more mature and not.
I think it was one of those things where when he did it, it probably felt really good, but he's probably going to wake up this morning and regret a little bit and just say, you know what, these are still my boys. These are still the guys that I fought a lot of battles with. And I may have come after him just a little too hard yesterday.
Well, I don't think it's about them. And maybe the guys may feel that way. I get it. But I think in his mind, he got cut, right? And we talk about this a lot, that players, when you don't play well, you get cut. Jason Garrett should be cut. And I think that's like the point he's trying to get across, is that, okay, you can say whatever about my play or what I am in the locker room, and maybe I should have gotten cut, but I shouldn't have been the first one cut. You coaches should be the first one cut, because they haven't done much. Like, they haven't been successful. For the amount of money, for the amount of talent they have, especially on that offensive line, which is like the hardest group to get together that is that good. So I feel like in his mind, he's more pointing to the coaches saying how bad they are, as opposed to he was the problem. You guys are the problem.
So, well, that brings me with a good transition to the coach on the hot seat or with the toughest job this year. Mm. And I'm going to go out and say Jason Garrett. I'm not saying he's on the hot seat today, but what I'm saying is he's got the toughest job this season, right? Because they have less talent than they have had in the past years, right? You lose Hall of Fame tight end Dez Bryant. You cut your kicker, by the way, your all-pro kicker. You lose your all-pro center, Travis Frederick. And now all of a sudden the expectations have somehow gone up from where they were last year, and they already missed the playoffs last year. So I'm going to say that Jason Garrett has the toughest job, because if he doesn't make the playoffs this year, I think generally speaking, most people think that they're going to go a different direction and find a new coach.
And they should. I couldn't agree more. But my pick for the hottest seat is Sean McDermott out in Buffalo.
Really? Okay. Let's hear it.
Last year, they were 6-3, and they benched Tyrod for Nathan Peterman. Nathan Peterman comes in, he throws five interceptions in one half. Literally the worst half of quarterback play in the history of the NFL. He had -7 fantasy points, and he was outscored by all 7.6 billion humans on Earth. Okay? They put Tyrod back in the second half. So here we are into a new season. We spend a first-round pick on Josh Allen. We acquired A.J. McCarron in the offseason. At the end of camp, we say Nathan Peterman's having a great camp. We feel so good about him. We name him the starter. We sit our first rounder, and we trade A.J. McCarron, a really, 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 really good bridge quarterback.
Yep. Right? A.J. was the perfect guy.
He was the perfect guy. You trade him. You start Nathan Peterman. What does Nathan Peterman do? He comes out, and he does what Nathan Peterman has showed us he's done, Mr. Coach McDermott. He went, what was it? Like 5 for 24 yards and 2 interceptions. In four quarters of play, Nathan Peterman is 11 for 32, 90 yards, and 7 interceptions. And I think a -negative quarterback passer rating. And that doesn't fall on Nathan Peterman. It's not his fault that he wasn't ready to be an NFL quarterback. It's not his fault that he's not playing well and guys are dropping passes and doesn't have the protection. It's McDermott's fault, because he keeps putting him in impossible situations. And when you make those decisions, That should come back on you. And everyone's going to say, he was in the playoffs last year. Nobody was saying that when we fired Ben McAdoo. When we told Ben McAdoo he was making terrible decisions and they fired him, everybody applauded it. Sean McDermott should be on the hot seat.
So I'm going to tell you that Sean McDermott is not on the hot seat because he took the Buffalo Bills to the playoffs last year for the first time since before I was in diapers. So he's not on the hot seat. However, this is my mini rant about defensive coaches being head coaches. Now, obviously, there's been plenty of great defensive coaches that have been great head coaches in the NFL, namely Bill Belichick, Bill Parcells. Let's go and say there's plenty of other ones as well. But so what I will say, those are two of the best ones, all right, of all time. But I will say one of the pitfalls of having a defensive coordinator as a head coach is that they are a little bit short-sighted, right? Because as a defensive player, you a lot of times you don't look at the big picture, right? They're all about like hustle and competition and toughness and be harder than the next guy, right? Whereas an offensive coach is much more cerebral. He's looking at the big picture. He's thinking down the line. He's thinking four or five plays down the line all the time. And a defensive coach is more about just being a badass, right? And so to me, I see Sean McDermott as a guy that just wants to be the badass. He wants to create competition everywhere, and every day is a competition. Every play is a competition. And instead of thinking long-term, what's the best interest of this organization and this team, a lot of times they're just thinking about, all right, who did the best job in this drill, and we're going to reward them right away. And so what I see is that, like last year with Terod, he benched Terod in the middle of a season where they were, what, you said 6-2?
6-3 at the time.
6-3. And you bench your starting quarterback for what? I'm not sure why, but in his mind, it was, we're going to send a message to the team that this is not good enough, and we're going to put the next guy in if you're not doing your job. And what happens, right? We saw the Nathan Peterman showing from last year, right? So then fast forward to this season, right? And I don't want to make this about Nathan Peterman. Hawk, I'm afraid you're getting death threats from his family already.
He really is a good kid.
I don't really know anything about him as a quarterback other than his stat line. But like you said, this year you go ahead and you had the perfect bridge quarterback in AJ McCarron, and you had the young guy in Josh Allen. You had the plan perfectly in place, right? But what do? You go into the season and you get rid of AJ McCarron. That was a huge mistake. And you start Nathan Peterman over Josh Allen. If you're going to get rid of AJ McCarron and say the future is now, just push Josh Allen in there. But if he's not ready, let him sit and play AJ McCarron. Don't just go play the guy that looked good in your bag drill that did a great job in the meeting, took the best notes, and you're going to reward the guy for that. I mean, let's play the guy that has the best chance to give our team the best chance to win for the whole season. Don't just be a tough guy.
I agree, man. I think he's in the hot seat. You can say what you want. I feel like he has a track. He has a bad track record for decision making.
All right, here's my next one for you. What was the bigger offseason mistake? Cutting Dez Bryant or cutting your all-pro kicker? Now, for those of you that didn't watch the end of the Cowboys game, they had an opportunity to win the game, and their kicker missed it. Now, that wasn't exactly a verbatim what happened, but their kicker missed like a 30-yard field goal at some point in the second half that would have given an opportunity to win. And recently, they got rid of Dan Bailey, one of the most accurate kickers of all time, and they replaced him with a young buck.
I'm going to say for the Cowboys, I'm going to say Dez Bryant. Because with Dez Bryant, you're probably not in that situation. For like Dak Prescott, you need weapons, man. Like, not only that, it opens up your run game. Even if Dez Bryant isn't what he used to be, he demands attention. He demands being game planned for, and that takes guys out of the box. That takes focus from the safety off of the run game to the receivers. It gives you whatever, but you don't have that. Guys are going to pack the box. They're going to make it really, really hard on Ezekiel Elliott in that offensive line. Guys aren't being real threats downfield, so the pass game isn't anything anybody's scared of. I think Dez Bryant was the bigger mistake.
I'm actually going to go on the other side of the coin there. I'm going to say Dan Bailey was the bigger mistake, because I think sometimes GMs, in this case Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones, you want to make the hard decision, right? You want to remove emotion from the situation as much as you can and make the analytical choice and say, you know what, we love this guy, but we think the guy behind him gives our team a better chance to win now, and it makes more sense for this team and on down the line, right? What are the reasons? But with Dan Bailey, the reason they got rid of him is I'm not even sure why. It's not like he cost too much money. Like Dez Bryant, his contract was clearly bigger than what his ability was at this point in his career. But like you mentioned, he still was a weapon, right? Okay, right. With Dan Bailey, why did you get rid of him? I can't name one reason why you would get rid of an all-pro kicker other than the fact that you think for some reason kickers don't have value. Now, this is a common mistake, in my opinion, in the NFL is the salary cap guys, they come in, or the GMs, they come in and say, all right, where can we trim some money? Well, we can trim it from the kicker. He's making too much money. But in comparison to the salary cap, they're making 1% or 2%, which is peanuts. And I'm sure that Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones wish that they would have spent a little bit more money on their kicker in their salary cap when they're sitting there and you need that field goal to win the game, because all 52 other guys on that roster were counting on that kicker in that very moment. And until you have a guy that's been through that fire and had that experience, just because he won the kicking contest in training camp in shorts and a t-shirt does not mean he's ready to go out and do it in crunch time on Sunday in an NFL game. So I think for the Cowboys, getting rid of Dan Bailey was a bigger mistake than getting rid of Dez Bryant.
And we've been in those situations. Pat McAfee is going to be really happy you just did that for the brand, as he would say. All right, now we got to pick our favorite young trio, which is quarterback, running back, receiver. Who was your favorite from Sunday?
You know what? I'm going to go with Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, and Kareem Hunt. I thought all those guys did a really good job. I was impressed. Patrick Mahomes played a lot better than I expected. As a second-year guy, without a lot of experience, I knew he had a lot of talent, but I wasn't sure he'd be as polished as he was. But he impressed. And obviously, Tyreek Hill and Kareem Hunt are studs. I'm glad they're on my fantasy team.
Yeah, and I said receiver, running back, quarterback, but we didn't have to keep it to that. We could have kept it to any three trio of playmakers for a team. But I also picked Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, and Kareem Hunt. Not Kareem Hunt because he went to Toledo. Not Tyreek Hill because he's a short receiver. Because they're both really good. And they remind me of myself.
So when I picked them to win the AFC this year, you guys both ridiculed me and laughed at me. And now they're the best trio in the NFL.
I don't think they're the best trio. They were the most exciting yesterday, and they performed the best. I'll give them that. I still don't think they're going to go to the Super Bowl. But Mahomes did look like a dude. Firm, you spent some time with Mahomes. Tell us about the couple of days that you were with Mahomes and what you've seen from him.
Yeah, well, we were just talking about, he had a couple throws yesterday on the run where he just flicked it and it still went like 40 yards. And yeah, at a previous stop, I hung out with him for about 3 days before, while he was training for the combine. And so we were just like out on a field, and like there was no defense, obviously, but he was working on some play action stuff. And he, towards the end of one of the practices, he just dropped back and he was like, I think he literally said, watch this to people before he did it. And he like play faked, stopped, and then flicked it, and the ball went nearly 70 yards. And like, I've never seen somebody do an athletic feat like that in person. And I didn't know what to do with myself. He also told us that pregame, when he was at Texas Tech, he said that he could throw, if he wanted to, he could throw the ball 80 yards. Like he could set and just throw it and go 80 yards, and he would try to do it in pregame. And he said he got to like 75. So
that's ridiculous.
His arm strength is crazy. But I think like what Joe said, just seeing how polished he was yesterday, more so than just like his ability to launch the ball miles in the air. He's going to be, that offense is going to be a lot of fun.
He has like such a big arm. We had Cliff Kingsbury on in the spring, and you know, Cliff has coached, what is it, Case Keenum, Johnny Manziel, Baker Mayfield, Mahomes. And of all those, he was like, yo, Mahomes' arm, none of those guys could even come close to it. And yesterday when you watched him with the weapons that he has, with the Travis Kelce's, the Tyreek Hill's, the Kareem Hunt's, you can see why people are so excited about him, because he has the arm. Like, he can literally make every throw. Everyone says that about quarterbacks, but he just looks different doing it. You can tell he's like, his upside is crazy.
The Chiefs won 38-28 over the Chargers. And I actually think the Chargers are going to be pretty good this season.
Yeah.
But let's give some credit to Andy Reid. He has always got his team ready at the beginning of the season. He does a great job. I was really impressed. As NFD clearly pointed out, he loves the Chiefs, and they exceeded my expectations this weekend.
I love it, man. All right. Well, I think we pretty much covered a lot of the NFL. Not all of it, most of it. We might have some Q&A here. NFD, we got any Q&A?
We'll have it next episode. And we'll also review our picks.
All right.
I'll give you a quick spoiler alert just from yesterday. Joe only picked 4 correct games. Hawk picked 6, and I picked 7.
We still got games to go, though, right?
Two tonight, baby.
And we got to tally the rest of the Tomahawk family. staff to see who the winner and the leaderboards are.
We got to check in on the DraftKings stuff too, because for some reason, Hawk, my lineup and your lineup got eliminated. It was probably because they were so good. They were in such a huge lead that I think never scored a TD, went in and deleted our lineups.
Exactly, because I remember I picked Ryan Fitzpatrick as my quarterback, and I had James Conner as my running back. I had Miles Garrett as my defense. So we'll figure out what happened with the technical difficulties. I think that does it for today's Tomahawk. Appreciate everybody listening. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you rate 5 stars. Follow us on social at Tomahawk Show. Use the hashtag Tomahawk to give us any Q&As, comments, or anything you got going. Tell all your family and friends about the best podcast on earth. Joe, any final thoughts?
My final thoughts are that you shouldn't listen to whatever I say about the NFL, because clearly I'm wrong. I picked the Saints to win the Super Bowl and Tampa to be the worst. But if you're looking for a ringer, listen to what NFD says. If you're looking to bet on games, he seems to know what the hell he's talking about, because he's
winners. All right, NFD, take us out like always.
Chill hawk yourself.